Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
House Commerce Committee will come to order. I'd like to greet all of our internet listeners and welcome everyone on a windy day. Quick reminder to turn off your cell phones and sign in at the back if you're here to testify. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Blake, Fargin, Greenfield, Jensen,
here.
Kirschman,
here.
Krebs,
here.
Nostrup,
here.
Nygaard,
here.
Pitts,
here.
Solberg,
here.
Solem,
here.
Dreyer,
here.
And Rounds,
here.
We have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. Do we have a motion for approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Approved by Representative Brown, seconded by Representative Fargin. Minutes are approved. Oh, excuse me. Voice vote for approval of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I already did.
Consider Representative Nordstrom.
Personal privilege, please.
Granted.
My cousin Emily Sperry is here for Shadow Days, so just want to introduce her.
Good morning.
Here.
Right now. I'd like to introduce our pages for their last day here. Larissa from Tripp and Miranda from Aberdeen. Where's
Aaron?
Aaron? Okay. Being a good page.
Mr. Chair?
Personal privilege for Representative Rounds.
Yes, I do have a personal privilege. Sitting in the back row, for those of you sitting up front here, he's kind of hidden in the back row there, is a gentleman that knows these halls very well. He spent a lot of time up here working, and then as a sergeant at arms over in the Senate. He also happens to be my father, Don Rounds. And make sure your cell phone's off. Thank you.
Consideration of bills. We will be hearing bills today. We're going to be hearing HB 1049, HB 1057, and then we'll continue on with HB 1050 as is in the order. First, we'll start off with House Bill 1049. Any proponents for House Bill 1049?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Division of Insurance. House Bill 1049 deals with captive insurers, and let me just explain a little bit on what we mean by captive, because that's not something that's commonly talked about. A captive insurance company may be best described by an example. If a business, let's just take, for example, a manufacturing corporation, decides that they want to, in a manner, insure their own insurance risk, their property and liability risk, they form a subsidiary company, which is the captive insurance company, that accepts their the parent, that manufacturing firm's insurance risk. In this case, the example we're using, the property and liability coverages for that manufacturer. This captive insurance company then becomes a licensed insurance company in the state that they're formed. South Dakota has had a captive law in the books for a number of years. The original intent behind the statute, as it was in some other states that have gone down this route, is to try and use it as an economic development tool, try and encourage out-of-state companies to form a captive insurance company in South Dakota. Quite frankly, that statute as it currently exists has not been successful in doing so. We've only had one captive in all the years that the laws have been on the books, and so at least for that purpose, it really has not worked well. In the last year or so, we have been approached by some interests that want to form some captives in South Dakota, but indicated that there is some loosening up, if you will, that needs to be done for our statutes to make it more business friendly and to make it more amenable for captives to come into South Dakota. And in fact, a study that was done recently indicated we had among the most stringent captive laws in the country. So that is the genesis for this legislation, is to try and revise our captive requirements to make them a little more amenable for captives to come into South Dakota. And so that's what we're dealing with the bill. Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment, and could I speak to the amendment and the bill? It's up to you. Where
that's
wait
fine.
Till later.
Yes.
That's fine. I'd like to hit a few highlights on the bill and also talk a little bit about the amendment that we have, which are, I think, fairly technical and just non-controversial. First of all, one of the things we're trying to do with this legislation, and you'll see some dichotomies in the bill, is under our current law, we only deal with what's called a pure captive. And that's kind of like the example I gave where you have a company and then they form a subsidiary just to insure that one company only. So you have a one-on-one kind of a situation. This legislation will allow something called a group captive, which allows multiple parents to get together and form a single captive to insure those risks of those that group of parent companies collectively. So that's one of the things that we're trying to do here is to allow a group captive situation. With a group captive, there is a higher degree of risk involved, and therefore in a number of these situations, you're going to see a differential between a pure captive and a group captive, and recognizing that we don't need as high regulation for pure captive as we do for group. So that's part of the reason that you'll see a number of things broke out differently between the two. One of the things, and it's part of the amendment that we want to deal with, is limiting the amount of exposure for any one risk, and this would be most important in the group captive concept, that you want not to have more than 10% of any one risk assumed and without reinsurance involved. It was pointed out to us that as written, that's a little more stringent. It's even required of regular insurance companies, so our amendment would cross-reference Chapter 5813, which exempts out work comp, which the regular insurers, in fact, do. So that makes it more consistent and with how the regular insurers would operate. Some of the other features are involved deal with the payout of dividends to allow a mechanism for that, to set the capital and surplus at a minimum of $250,000, but not more than $500,000. Also, we have some special extra recording requirements for group captives as opposed to pure captives in Section 7, specifically requiring a actuarial opinion to accompany the annual financial statement so we can have a little more confidence that the financials are in order. Again, that's more important with a group captive than it is with a pure captive, but we still want reports even with pure captives. And there's also investment limitations put in place for group captives as well. Again, that's not as critical with pure captives as it is with group. And then finally, the last section says that, okay, you know, you can take on the risk of your parents as a captive, but you can't take on the risk of anybody but your parents. And you can't take on life or health insurance risk or personal lines property casualty. We're only talking about here is commercial property casualty risk, and that's what we're limiting it to. So with that, I will stand by for questions. I know there's some other proponents that would like to talk about it, and we'd certainly appreciate, and if I could get my assistant to give the folks the amendment, we would appreciate favorable consideration on that as well.
Thank you, sir. And they have passed out those amendments, and we'll move those when we get to discussion and or action. Any other proponents for House Bill 1049?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jeremiah D. Murphy. I'm a lawyer and a lobbyist from Sioux Falls, and I represent Avera Health. And we come in support of this measure. I come in a little bit of an unusual capacity because 25 years ago I was a part of a group that formed a captive. You really couldn't do it in the United States then. We did it in Bermuda. But having lived under it, I know it was a very, very good thing to do and profitable. We were a group that felt our premiums were too high and we couldn't get the insurers to bring them down. So believing that, as we did, that our premiums were too high, we formed a captive. And we didn't lower our premiums. We kept them where they were. And because the premiums proved to be too high, the captive made good profit. But we operated like a regular insurance company. We reinsured the risk. We got a national adjuster, Crawford and Company, adjusted. So if there was any ever a claim, there was an adjuster every place in the United States. We had actuarials, we had investment managers, and we operated a successful insurance company. So I had the pleasure of being in a captive that succeeded and accomplished the purpose for which it was formed. So we really support the measure before you. Avera would like to do it. Avera really can't operate under this captive law. One of the changes that Avera likes is the fact that you can do it in a nonprofit form. I should explain that. By nonprofit form, I don't mean that it wouldn't have a profit or that it wouldn't pay taxes. If Avera operated a captive in a nonprofit South Dakota corporation, it would pay all of the same taxes to the state of South Dakota that any other insurance company would pay. And it would also pay federal income taxes. But by operating in a nonprofit, you get some special rules. Nonprofits are owned by members. And when you have a nonprofit hospital, it's very difficult to have somebody issuing stock. It really causes some problems for you. So it's much better if you can just have five of your key employees or something like that be the members that own the nonprofit corporation. You don't have shareholders, then you don't have a dividend. If you have something that goes back, it could go back in the form of a premium reduction or something like that to the parent. That would be a pure captive. The same appeal might be to a group of hospitals. In other words, if all of the hospitals in South Dakota wanted to form their own captive, they would probably want a nonprofit also, and it would be they would have a board of members, and it wouldn't have owners; it would have members. The directors would be members, and so that way it would fit more the corporate structure that they use. It is not, I emphasize, it's not a tax device. They would pay all of the taxes that an ordinary captive would. But that would be an advantage that they'd like. They also would like to see the statute not loosened. We say modernized. We don't think that it's necessarily loosened. It's got restrictions today that make it very, very difficult to operate under it, and we think that should be modernized. There's a lot of experience out there. I believe New Hampshire has 800 captives. We have one. And we only have one because of the nature of our statute. And I can tell you this: I was also part of a group. In fact, I lobbied a bill in '72, and it was passed that gave us the authority to form private trust companies. And that's become a cottage industry in Sioux Falls and Rapid City. There are many private trust companies now in South Dakota, and many families of considerable wealth are moving trust business to South Dakota, and it's making work for people, and it's causing some revenue to be paid into the state. If this works as I think it could, this hopefully would attract some good captive insurance companies to South Dakota who would pay insurance premiums, who would have employees, and hopefully would come into a little cottage industry just as the trust business has become in South Dakota. So for those reasons, I support it. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Any other proponents?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Matt McCauley. I'm a lawyer and a lobbyist from Sioux Falls. I'm here on behalf today for South Dakota Risk Management Group. You all heard the governor's budget address yesterday, and everyone knows the state faces a variety of fiscal challenges, but South Dakota has some remarkable success stories when dealing with business and industry and modernizing our statutes. Mr. Murphy talked about an area of trust companies. We also, the legislature years ago, abolished the rule against perpetuities to allow for some of these legacy trusts to move, relocate to South Dakota. We've modernized some of our statutes decades ago relative to the interest rates, allowing banks more flexibility on interest rates, and brought a lot of jobs to South Dakota. We believe this is one of those bills, and my client wants to bring a business and bring a captive here and locate to South Dakota. And I'll tell you that for a variety of reasons, South Dakota is an attractive business environment. Number one, we don't have a state income tax, and that's very attractive to companies. The handout that I passed out, Vermont, you'll see other states are actively courting these captive insurance companies and, in fact, cutting taxes for some of them to get them to stay or to relocate to Vermont. So this is really a competitive industry, and we think that House Bill 1049 has been proposed by the division, and we support both amendments as well. Really will modernize our statutes and make us competitive on a national basis. And every captive that relocates or that comes to South Dakota and issues policies here will pay a minimum of $5,000 in premium taxes directly to the state. So the state does get a benefit. And I'll also point out, and I've said this before too, when it comes to some of the trust company statutes, we don't necessarily need a lot of these relationships to have benefit. If we get one or two of the right relationships, these business people come to South Dakota, they see what a great environment it is here, and they might choose to relocate their business or expand their businesses here. And I can't say enough about the Division of Insurance from my client's perspective. And just in general, it means a lot to people when they can call out here and ask for some updates and some modernization to the statutes, and you see the division respond with a bill like this that will make us competitive. And they can fly into Pierre and have meetings, and we just have a very attractive business climate. So for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee would strongly support passage of this and make South Dakota competitive on a national level. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other proponents for 1049?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kurt Everson. I represent the South Dakota Bankers Association as their registered lobbyist. We have been engaged for some time now in discussions with the Division of Insurance about a desire of that my members have to look at some kind of a self-insurance scheme for workers' compensation. Not unlike there was a bill that passed this legislature in the mid-90s on behalf of the electric utilities companies to allow them to, as an association, band together and offer workers' comp to their members. Basically, that under that scheme, the regulation comes from the Department of Labor. We have been talking with the Division of Insurance about that concept, and then this bill came forward, and we have a definite interest in seeing this bill as amended move forward, and we think it would be a good fit for us to be able to offer that to the members of the South Dakota Bankers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other proponents for House Bill 1049? Any opponents for House Bill 1049? Hearing none, I will open it up to questions and comments, discussion. Representative Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Mr. Moser. Yeah, Andy. Could you describe the one or two of those examples of entities that are interested in doing a captive here in South Dakota that you mentioned that had contacted you? You don't have to name them. Just give me a general description of what they.
The one was an out-of-state firm that was, if I recall correctly, was involved in the plumbing distribution business. Plumbing. There's another one that was interested, and I quite frankly don't recall the type of business that it was.
And just one follow-up, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Knight, Representative Nygaard.
Thank you. And were they? Was it a peer captive, or was it going to be a captive insurance company?
The one that I was referring to was interested in a group captive situation.
Thank you.
Representative Cardin.
Thank you. I guess with this change to this law, how does that affect, or I guess how do we sit compared to other states, or how friendly are we going to be compared to other states with their captive law?
I don't know that we've done analysis to on a state-by-state basis. What we attempted to do, Representative Fergin, is to try and get ours to more business-friendly. We did look at Vermont very, very strongly and trying to determine what was appropriate for us. So you will see much more similarity between ours and Vermont, for example. But I really can't give you a blow-by-blow as far as the states are concerned because we didn't do that level of analysis.
Mr. Representative Brown.
Mr. Moses, I got just a real quick question. We've got two amendments that were passed out in front of us. Yours was 49SB with the changes on line 3 or line 17, page 3. Then we received another one, 49SA. Is that a typo that we're talking about, or is there, because when you're moving from less to more, makes a difference?
Representative Rounds, it in fact was a mistake, and we had it backwards and somebody caught it, and I don't know why we didn't realize it, but yes, that's exactly what it was.
Representative Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to speak to Jeremiah D. Murphy, if I could. I always enjoy this opportunity when I can do this.
Sure. There's a lot of lawyers that would like to have me under cross-examination.
That's right. Cross-examine you. Ms. Murphy, could you just give me an example of this new Section 11 on page 6, specifically lines 14 through 22, where it looks to me like a pure captive could engage in more of a management situation rather than being, in fact, an insurer at risk. They would just form a pure captive to manage someone in, for example, a captive
I think company. I think that is the meaning of it, a provision. I have to tell you, I lost my bill on the way, but I remember the provision, and I think that's what it does. It allows them to manage, but they would manage under all the rules of the code as amended. You said lines.
Yeah, 14 through 18.
Yes, that would allow them to enter into a management business. It does, though, 1, 2, 3, restrict the types of risks that it may insure. And I have to confess, I'm not as familiar with that provision as others because I can't give you an example of when that might happen, and I'm sure there are good examples. And if the state looked at New Hampshire, that's probably where that came from. I might say this about other states, and I see it in the trust business. We have a lot of competition in the trust business, and we land a lot of trusts here. And the fact that we don't have an income tax is significant. And one of the things I tell people when they're looking at South Dakota is they say, well, but they're exempt from income tax in my state if they have a trust. I said, but there's a difference. They have to file a return and then be exempt. In South Dakota, you don't even have a return. And they like that. The other thing about South Dakota is they have access. If you have a trust company that wants to come in South Dakota, they can come to Pierre and meet with the people in banking that really make the decisions. And that's been our experience also with insurance. And if somebody had to come here with an insurance problem or something, they can come to Pierre, South Dakota, and they can see some real human beings. They don't get shoved down the line and not meet the decision makers. And they're very, very impressed and favorably so, because when they come to South Dakota, they get to see the decision makers.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Representative Niger.
Thank you. Mr. Murphy, in this handout from Matt, the last statement was referring to the continuing hardening of the traditional insurance market. Now, is that because of the recession in terms of premium cost, or is it something to do with the reserves that we've had a problem with not being adequate to fully fund traditional insurance companies?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a lawyer, and I'm not sure I know the. I think the person on your left could give a better answer than I can. But I think what it reflects on is that, in my experience in insurance, that it gets hard and soft, as they say. The business becomes competitive, and they cut the prices. Then all of a sudden, it doesn't. They have an accident or something, and they get hard, and they go up and down. And I think that they're saying that the premiums are getting tougher, and it's tougher to find somebody that wants to insure you. And I would defer to Mr. Representative Rounds, because he knows a lot more about that than I do.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, we'll open up to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Greenville.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to move Amendment 1049-SA.
Second. Amendment 1049-SA has been moved by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Rounds. And Amendment 1049-SA on page 4, line 6 of the printed bill, delete less and insert more. Any discussion on that? If not, we'll open up to a voice vote. All those in favor will signify by saying aye. All those opposed, nay.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Representative Negger.
Yes, I'd like to move Amendment 1049-SB.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Amendment 1049-SB has been moved by Representative Nygaard, seconded by Representative Fargin. Any discussion on that motion? All those in favor will signify by saying aye. All those
aye.
In favor? Opposed? The motion is carried, 1049-SB. We're back to discussion and or action on ELS Bill 1049. Representative Rounds.
Purpose of discussion, I would move due pass on House Bill 1049.
Second.
Representative Rounds, motion due pass, seconded by Representative Greenfield. Any discussion?
If I may. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a work in progress, and you heard in the testimony today that I think South Dakota would be ripe for this type of business to expand, for to come in. I think Vermont, as my discussions were prior to committee, the opportunity's there, and I see that this piece of legislation does have a lot of merit and has a lot of possibilities in South Dakota being in the insurance business. I'm aware of the expansion that could exist. I think it's a good piece to move forward. I would ask those members here to help me move it to the floor. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the motion? If not, this will be a roll call vote. Secretary, please call the roll on 1049 as amended.
Representatives Blake?
Yes.
Fargin?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Kirschman?
Aye.
Krebs?
Aye.
Nostrap?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Solberg?
Aye.
Solem?
Aye.
Dreyer?
Aye.
Rounds?
Aye.
13-0.
1049 passes as amended. Representative Rounds will carry this on the floor. And Nygaard, if you could please cover for the Democrat caucus. And on to House Bill 1057. Proponents for House Bill 1057.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is James Marsh. I'm a director of the Division of Labor and Management in the State Labor Department. HB 1057. updates or modernizes the maximum reimbursement for burial expenses when a South Dakota employee dies from a workplace injury. The maximum was set at $5,000 in 1996. The bill increases that to $7,500. The new amount was developed based on a survey of funeral costs provided to us by the State Funeral Directors Association. No premium cost impact is anticipated for private employers. We only deal with perhaps 10 to 15 fatality claims a year, so this additional $2,500 would be very minimal. For state and local government employees, our understanding is that there have been four fatality claims since 1990, so the fiscal impact is nil for all intents and purposes. We would urge your support of House Bill 1057 for the benefit of the families of South Dakota employees who lose their lives on the job, who ask merely that they be fairly reimbursed for the costs they necessarily incur. I'd be available for any questions.
Any other proponents for House Bill 1057?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commerce Committee, good morning. My name is Paul Elward. I'm the registered lobbyist for the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. And I'm also a member of the Workers' Comp Advisory Council. And this issue was brought to the council this past year and was voted unanimously to support the concept of increasing the burial or the death expense for those workers who are unfortunate to lose their lives on the job in South Dakota. Just a little bit of background information. Across the nation, this provision or this benefit runs from a low of $2,000 in Mississippi to a high of any cost necessary in Kentucky. Surrounding states around us, Iowa has a $7,500 benefit. Minnesota has a $15,000 benefit. Nebraska has a $6,500 benefit. North Dakota is $6,500, and Wyoming is $10,000. I've been told by the South Dakota Funeral Directors Association that the average funeral cost in South Dakota is now at $10,300 for the average. Now, there's, of course, higher and lower. No-frills, about as plain a funeral as you can get, runs right at $6,500, according to the Funeral Directors Association. So this is by no means extravagant. In fact, it probably should be raised a little higher, but at least this is a good start and would put us someplace close to the actual cost. I hope you can support it. Thank you. Be glad to answer questions if you have them.
Thank you. Any other proponents for House Bill 1057? Hearing none, any opponents for House Bill 1057? Hearing none, we'll open up for committee questions. Representative Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Marsh. It says $7,500 maximum. In the event the funeral arrangements are less than that, which amount is being paid?
The lesser amount, Representative.
But it does not state that. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, it refers to a maximum. That's how we've interpreted that as department judges.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Representative Fulbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What would prevent a funeral home from knowing this, that normally charges $5,500, from saying, okay, this one, we've got this accident, so it's $7,500.
Mr. Chair, the law calls for a provider of services under South Dakota law to not charge any more to workers' compensation than it would to other types of payers. That's a Class 2 misdemeanor if they do. So it's a criminal act if they would attempt to do what you're describing.
Thank you, Mr. Marsh.
Representative Krebs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marsh, the question is for you as well. You did clarify this with the South Dakota Funeral Directors Association. They're okay with this number, correct? I just want to clarify that.
Now, they sent us a survey of costs, and we derived the number from that.
But did they, excuse me, Mr. Chair? Thank you. Mr. Marsh, did they feel that this was a reasonable, I mean, I know that they clarified an average cost, but did they feel that was a reasonable amount for the Funeral Directors Association.
Representative, we asked for feedback from the Middleman on that, and they didn't give us any.
Representative Kirschman.
I got a question to Mr. Marsh. Is this program made aware to anybody that's killed, the families of the ones that are killed, because you said there's only four?
Yes. At the point when the state receives the fatality report from the employer, mm-hmm. We send out a pamphlet which contains basic information about the workers' comp program, and certainly we're available for them for questions if they ask.
Any other questions? If not, we'll open up to committee discussion and or action. Sure. Representative Ross.
I would like to at this time move due pass on House Bill 1057, and I do have some comments.
Second. Move due pass by Representative Ross, second by Representative Krebs, and discussion by Representative Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the questions that I was listening to come out were very good questions. Those were questions that I also had, and I was able to visit with a representative of the funeral homes prior to this meeting, and they are aware of this amount, and the discussion was come up, and they are aware that, you know, if they decide to move up their costs in conjunction with the fact we're looking at $7,500, they're aware of the penalties that are involved. When you're dealing with workers' compensation, I've handled a number of those type of claims over the years, and I also handle claims in the property casualty end, where, like in an automobile, you would have medical pay limits of $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000. You know, it depends upon the policy you have. And those were always questions that came up. Would a doctor treat somebody up until their limit is done, reached, and then all of a sudden they're miraculously cured? And that doesn't happen in the industry. The industries I've worked with, I've worked with funeral homes over those type of claims before, they're more interested in the people they're working with, their customers or their patients. This is something that needs to be done. It is, I think, a little bit overdue. You heard the cost of the average funeral. I think we're maybe not to that level yet, but we are at least doing something. I would ask for your support in moving this bill onto the floor. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the motion to pass by Representative Rounds? Representative Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am in support of this bill, ye of suspicious mind. When there's bereavement involved and you're sitting down planning a funeral, if it's normally $5,500, it's easy to get it to $7,500. I'm looking at the cost towards compensation, company, and I'm looking for taking advantage of individuals. That is a problem or a question that I have. Thank you.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this in any way going to restrict the businesses from being able to raise their prices as a result of inflation, for instance?
Is that a question or
yes.
Discussion?
Well,
Representative Rounds can probably answer that for you.
I'm dealing with a comment over here and the question over here. You have to remember, first off, that we had the sum of $5,000 into this piece of legislation to begin with, and the problem did not exist back in the day where funeral costs were lower. We were at $5,000. We didn't have that problem. Our funeral directors didn't automatically come in and say, we know what the limit is, you're going to have to spend $5,000. The purpose of this bill is to allow more out-of-pocket coverage for the family, the loved ones, or the benefactors of the employee that was killed. Costs have gone up, but back 10 years ago they weren't that high. We didn't have the problem then when they were at $5,000. There are costs and involved with the funeral, they go up just like costs for every other medical bill out there. They go up over the years. The cost of living goes up. This will not affect how funeral homes do their pricing. A very small percentage of their business deals with workers' compensation claims. They would probably do more under an automobile medical pay policy or that type of thing, or the natural death of somebody. They don't do it in the auto industry. There are death benefits under those policies, not specifically for funeral home. They're not capped, but there are benefits of that sort. What this is doing is basically laying out that funeral costs have gone up over the year. There are other benefits that are going to be paid to that employee outside of this. There's generally medical bills involved. There's other benefits that are paid under a work comp policy that are paid to the family besides this benefit. If a funeral home, if somebody goes in and they felt like they were taken advantage by the funeral home, there are penalties out there. And the funeral home would not want to get stuck making it look like they were jacking up the price because we're dealing with this. This has been in statute for years, $5,000. We didn't have the problem then. I don't foresee the problem in the future. I don't know if that helps, but we dealt with existing language of $5,000 for a number of years, and I can't recall the year that was set into place off 96. We didn't see funeral costs automatically take that jump. Of course, they were probably above $5,000 to begin with anyhow at that time. So, thank you.
Representative Nygaard.
Just by way of further discussion, just to almost to reiterate, but put it in different words, 1996 dollars of $5,000 today, you would be lucky to be able to get a cremation. And I still think the worker in this great state has a right to, not the worker. At that point, we can't speak with them. But to the family and loved ones, they have a right to make a decision what type of burial they want and not be forced into the cheapest method, which is the $1,996 dollars and $5,000. Again, would force you to be very, it would really limit the treatment of that individual's being put to rest. So I would say that it's very reasonable for this body to vote in favor of this and approve this increase.
Representative Rons.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one thing else we have to look at here, we do not have any opposition from the industry itself, those that will be paying the bill. And they were the ones that, if there would be opposition or questions on this, would be up here saying, well, now we're going to be automatically paying this amount or whatever the case is. They're not here to be opponents to this piece of legislation. I think they understand that the costs are going up, and that is why they're not here today testifying in front of us. If there was that thought in mind, I think we would have an opponent to this someplace, or at least that discussion come up in testimony. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the motion to pass? Hearing none, this will be a roll call vote. Motion to pass on House Bill 1057. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Blake.
Aye.
Bargeon.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Northrop.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Pitts.
Aye.
Solberg.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Dreyer.
Aye.
Rounds.
Aye.
13-0.
House Bill 1057 passes, 13-0.
Kirschman's going to carry this one. You're going to cover it in the Republican caucus.
Representative Kirschman, could you please carry this in the Democratic caucus, and I will carry this, and on the floor as well, please, and I'll carry this in the Representative Republican caucus. It's difficult to say. Moving on to House Bill 1050. We're going to pick this up again from Wednesday. And I think what we'll do is have Randy come back up. We've all got a crib sheet, so to speak, on this bill. And give us a quick rundown as to what we discussed last time, and then we'll open it up to discussion and questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Randy Moses, Division of Insurance. I'll just give a quick overview of what I covered before. I've also asked Wendell Molson to come up. He's our financial expert. If there's any questions after going through this, I think he'd be the best person to answer those. They can get real technical in the financial area. Bill 1050 is an accreditation bill. It's designed to bring South Dakota up to minimum accreditation levels so that our insurance companies can only be examined by South Dakota and not have to be faced with examinations by other states that they may do business in. But furthermore, the bill does increase financial oversight. It provides for increased protection to make sure that the insurance companies that we're regulating are solvent. So that's the real two goals of this. It does through some additional oversight as far as the financial statements and the auditing, oversight of the audit committees. That's the primary mechanisms. The bill brief, I think, goes through and outlines each section. Hopefully it gives you a little better idea of what we're talking about there. And with that, I'll just stand by for questions, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. And with that, any other proponents on House Bill 1050? And thanks for keeping it short and sweet. We've heard it already before, so I guess, and thank you for the bill brief as well. We'll open it up to committee questions. Oh, I'm sorry, any opponents? Hearing none, open up to committee questions. Representative Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randy, SOX, S-O-X, and I see you've explained that, but Sarbanes-Oxley. I probably don't understand it any more than SOX. compliant, SOX compliant or services. Could you just outline that a little bit more, not only for us here, but for the listening public, what SOX compliant is?
If I may, I'll defer to Wendell on that.
Please.
Yeah. Wendell Molson with the Division of Insurance. SOX is the acronym for the federal legislation known as the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. That act came about as a result of the financial turmoil in the markets back in 2000 and primarily 2001. And really where the legislation was primarily prompted by the failure of Enron. The purpose of the act is to introduce additional corporate governance standards on publicly traded companies, and you see those in this bill. This bill is this NAIC model legislation is patterned after the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. So what this bill provides is that if you're already a publicly traded company and you're adhering to the requirements of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, we're not going to impose any additional corporate governance provisions on you. You're already in compliance if you just give us a copy of what you've already done.
Thank you very much.
Any further questions? Hearing none, we'll open up to committee discussion and or action. Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move due pass on House Bill 1050.
Second. Move due pass by Representative Brown, second by Representative Krebs. Any discussion on the motion? Chair. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to thank Mr. Moses for providing the bill brief as requested. I think it really did help as we were moving along on this bill for those of us that took the time to read it and look it over with the bill. It kind of lays out what each section does. I'm always a little leery when you get model legislation because sometimes I believe that other states should conform to us and not us conform to them. But in this case, I think it's a piece of legislation that I think will clarify and clean up some statutes. I believe in help with some oversight. Save some time in the long run, I believe, is what it's going to do, and still have those requirements in place to protect the investors and those involved. So I think this bill should move on to the floor, and I'd ask you to support it. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the motion to pass? Hearing none, this will be a roll call vote. Motion do pass on House Bill 1050. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Blake.
Aye.
Bargeon.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Nostrup.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Pitts.
Aye.
Solberg.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Dreyer.
Aye.
Rounds.
Aye.
13-0.
Motion carries. House Bill 1050 is passed. And
my name is the chair. Representative Nygaard will cover this one on the floor, and Representative Nygaard will carry it on the floor, and Representative Greenfield will carry it in the caucus, the House caucus. And I'd come armed the same way Randy did. If you could carry him on the floor, I would.
And you're too slow on the gun. I would have if I was sitting where you were. Representative Rounds, did you want to cover anything before we go?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're pretty much winding down today on our committee action, what's in front of us. I have someplace in front of me our agenda. I'd like to run over with it for the committee members and those out here what we are planning on doing Monday. We're going to take up five bills on Monday. Most of them will be, a couple of them are Department of Labor and a couple of them are revenue. We've got House Bill 1056, which is a State Cosmetology Commission bill. House Bill 1058 revises certain privileges for certified public accountants. House Bill 1059, define and prohibit controlled business and insurance. House Bill 1060 revises certain provisions regarding the mortgage lender business. And we will be taking up our first bill on Monday, which is not a department bill, and it is a House Bill 1100. This is revised where business records of insurance producers may be maintained. That's one of my bills, folks. So it's a consent calendar type, all my bills are. So.
Yeah.
It looks like a lot of bills, but I think when you look at these bills, for the most part, they look to be pretty clear and concise. So I think we can roll through five bills pretty easy. We do have a number of bills that are now, if you listen to when they do the first reading on the floor, we've got a number of bills being assigned to this committee. So we are going to start really getting into some heavy sessions. We've got some Senate bills that have already come over. I try to keep those as maybe fillers in committees when we don't have a whole lot of House bills, because we do not have to deal with those until after crossover day. But I'll try and fit in some of those Senate bills where we can fit them. But we do have some busy days coming up, so be here on time Monday. We'll get through these. Thank you.
The chair will now entertain a motion to adjourn. Representative Krebs, seconded by Representative Pitts. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?